Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster, a Nerd Party original release. I'm one of your hosts for today, Lee Hutchison, and today we're going to discuss Marriage Story and our favourite Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig moments. So, dropping on November 6th on Netflix, but in cinemas now, is Marriage Story. But also dropping today is Dallas King. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Emotionally fraught.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a little while since we've seen this film, but for those who haven't seen the film yet, it's been in cinemas for a little while, and it'll be dropping on Netflix this Friday. It's the story of a stage director and his actor wife, played by Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, who struggle through a grueling coast-to-coast divorce that pushes them to their personal and creative extremes. So, this is kind of topical because Marriage Story won in all four categories. It was nominated at the Gotham Awards, so Best Feature, Best Actor for Adam Driver, Best Screenplay for Writer-Director Noah Baumbach, and the Audience Award. Scarlett Johansson missed out to Awkwafina from The Farewell, but otherwise it was a clean sweep. So Dallas, it's been a little while since we've seen Marriage Story at the London Film Festival. What was your first? What was your expectations going in, and what was your thoughts coming out?
Well, my expectations going in were sort of high, you know, all the talent involved was extremely good. You know, Adam Driver, I've probably said on Filibuster, I think, in the past, that I think he's sort of the best actor of his generation working at the moment. Scarlett Johansson, when she's moving away from, you know, causing a stir in press interviews about, you know, things that she shouldn't be saying or people she shouldn't be saying things about, and away from Avengers, she's really good in sort of the smaller independent stuff. So it was nice to see her go back to that. Noah Baumbach, I've been a fan, a sort of growing fan of his, sort of going off, you know, it was a bit cool to begin with, but sort of I'm really sort of warming to him as a filmmaker these days, as I'm sure we'll get into later on. So expectations were high going in. Didn't know a huge amount about it. I think we'd maybe got one trailer over here. I think by that time we'd seen it at the London Film Festival, but I have to admit I did actually go and pay to see it again just a couple of days ago because I wanted to see it on the big screen again before it came out on Netflix, and it still lived up to the hype of, well, my own personal hype having after my original screening. And I think it's actually, I'm not going to say what I think of it because it might give the game away a bit later on. So yeah, what were your first thoughts sort of going in and coming out of it?
Yeah, this was one I was really excited for, and I think it was mostly because, sort of with the Meyerowitz stories, I had missed that in the cinema. It sort of had a very limited run at the London Film Festival, and I think you could maybe catch it in a Curzon cinema for like a screening or two. So I had to make do with it on Netflix for that. So I was kind of really excited going in because Noah Baumbach is one of my favourite writers and directors. So a movie from him is always an event, and I was really happy to get to see it so early at the London Film Festival, and then kind of after that to be able to kind of enjoy it in that way, as opposed to sort of watching it months later on Netflix. You know, it was great to be there at the beginning of sort of this wave it was kind of riding. So yeah, my expectations were incredibly high. I remember being really impressed with the poster art. We sort of have the, you know, this shadow, this kind of silhouette of Scarlett Johansson with the West Coast and then Adam Driver on the East Coast. And I just felt like it was going to be a movie that I would love. I mean, if I say I'm a fan of Noah Baumbach, that means I am quite have a soft spot for white people and their problems, and Noah Baumbach seems to do that quite well. So,
but have we had enough of that? Did you see that article this week about some guy moaning about the fact that basically he's had enough of movies where rich white folk in New York complain about their lives? It's like, I mean, isn't that all art? Really, if we boil it down to, isn't it all about rich white folk from New York complaining about their problems?
Yeah, I'd read it, and I don't have a real complaint with people saying things aren't kind of diverse enough. I mean, Baumbach's films aren't really the most diverse in the world, but my issue really was with the fact that they were dismissing this film, you know, while kind of making that point. I think you can have Marriage Story, but you can also have a very valid point about things like that. I just felt that the author, from what little I saw, was kind of blunted the point by sort of you know, making Marriage Story the ills of all these kind of problems. So I somewhat disagreed with it there. But yeah, ultimately I was so happy to go into that film, and I came out thinking it was absolutely fantastic. You know, I think it's, and it hopefully doesn't come across in the most negative way, but I think it's Baumbach's most traditional work, maybe most grown up to an extent. Whether I like that aspect, not as strongly, but that's just kind of from me as a fan. But still I think it's definitely one of his best works, and certainly up there for me. So Dallas, I know that I saw this film with you and it sort of touched you quite emotionally. I'd love to get your perspective on it, sort of, as someone, I'm currently not married, you're married, how much of a representation of this, and I should say this as a happily married man, what's your kind of view of this as sort of, how close to life is this about sort of pros and maybe sometimes the negatives of married life? Does Baumbach kind of capture that at all, or is it sort of a bit more focused on the negative side, which you have yet to encounter?
How close is it to my own personal life? Yeah. I know, I think you're sort of going back to your point just there. I think it is his most probably traditional and definitely his most grown-up work. I mean, Squid and the Whale is very grown up, but again, that's sort of more told from the point of the sort of the younger children in the family, so therefore it's still quite young in that respect. But this, I think, is his most, and I think it's probably his most accessible work. I think with the cast and crew that he's got, I think it's the one that he says has the most chance of breaking out. But unfortunately, you know, of course, it's on Netflix, which A means, of course, loads of people can see it on Netflix, but then, you know, if we're talking about breaking out in the cinema, of course, not many people will have that chance. Although I was lucky enough to see it at the cinema, because certainly in the UK, through Altitude and whatever, there is now, certainly compared to last year, I think I looked at a tweet of mine that was saying, come on, guys, you know, it was something, I think it was like Outlaw King or something, you know, we can't even see, and Roma, we can't see, you know, it's Scotland, there is places above Edinburgh and Glasgow, but this year, I'm happy to say that I've had the chance to see The Irishman on the big screen, Marriage Story on the big screen. I missed the chance, but I could have seen The King if I'd been able to get to a screening. It was on the big screen, and hopefully Uncut Gems to follow as well. So, you know, things are turning around in Netflix in terms of being able to see them on the big screen, but in terms of its authenticity and how close it is to thing, it certainly touched a nerve in places. I probably could say that I identified with Charlie more than any other film character this year. Not for the fact that I'm currently going through a divorce or whatever, but he seems like someone who is very, maybe occasionally sort of closed off in his emotions and unable to enter into dialogue with someone when he should be able to, which then maybe makes certain problems worse. But then he also is able to, in the scene, which I think, you know, I think it's okay because a lot of people are talking about the scene, so I feel okay to talk about the scene, the being alive moment when he sort of goes up at this very sort of high-end classy, I don't think it's even meant to be a karaoke bar, he just gets up and starts singing, but that moment where he, you basically see him get everything out of his chest through the medium of song, being able to express yourself through art or someone else's art, he's able to do no problem. And I, you know, come on these podcasts and I'm able to talk about films and have opinions on films and can rattle off, you know, film facts and stuff like that. I can talk about that stuff very easily when it comes to talking about myself. Sometimes I maybe find that a bit more difficult. And so therefore I could see myself a lot in Charlie. And throughout the film, I mean, there were several moments where it's just like, you know, I don't cry at movies. I've said this all the time, but you know, there was three moments that maybe I could have gone if I was so inclined. There's a moment where he reads a letter, the being alive moment, and just there's a moment where he's talking to Alan Alda's Bert when he's talking about the frustrations of it all coming out. The seemingly oxymoronical statement of, you know, we've got to prepare to go to court in order to not go to court and stuff, and he's just finding this whole thing mind-boggling. And I don't know if that is systematic of the American system only, or whether it's the same in the UK. I'm just, you know, fingers crossed, God hoping that I never have to go through that. I think, like you say, talking to people, there will be situations where married people will probably want to do whatever they can to work on their relationship so they don't get divorced, so they don't have to go through with that. If you're not married yet, it might put you off getting married in case you then end up having to go through that because it looks like hell. And yeah, so that's kind of where I am on the sort of the Charlie moment. I think for Noam Baumbach's credit, because it's kind of based on his own life, you know, he does, there could have been a tendency to do it all from Charlie's perspective, and therefore, but I think he did, it's quite a good double-hander. There's enough scenes with Scarlett Johansson on her own and seeing her side of the story that I think it's fairly well balanced. I'd say it's maybe about 60-40 in terms of Charlie. But one thing that Adam Driver does really, really well is, especially in, not only in this film but in other films, is he can make a character who at times can be unlikable, but you still find an innate charm and likability about him. You know, he can do bad things, but you still end up rooting for him. And I'm thinking even in Kylo Ren, I still find things which I really like about Kylo Ren, even though he's essentially a bad guy, even though I think he will not be a bad guy by the end of the next one. But I guess we'll find out about that. But yeah, I feel like I've gone on a bit of a rant there. But yeah. What about yourself?
No, you're spot on. I think you, I remembered coming out of that film, and I had a very similar thought to yourself of like, married couples that see this will feel anxious, and people that are not married will feel nervous that there might be a generation of film fans that watch this film and go, marriage, not for me. I'm happy. You know what? I'm going to stay doing my own little thing with my little theater troupe. I will do that instead. You know, it seems a lot less hassle. I think it's, it definitely holds, you know, I think even if you're not married, you're in relationship, single, I think people can pull from some of their behavior in it. There's moments I looked at and I thought, oh, I don't know. And I remember sitting there thinking, do I take my girlfriend to see this film? You know, am I making a rod for my own back if she looks at that and thinks, I recognize some of my boyfriend in that? Or will she sit there potentially uncomfortable in her own seat and think, ah, you know, it's one of those ones. I think it's almost best to just go on your own or with some friends and just be at peace with what you take from that film. That's yeah, for sure.
I think it's that in Midsommar. It's like, I expect if you are having relationship troubles, do not take your partner to see Midsommar and Marriage Story, because that could probably put the final nail in the coffin if you have any sort of trouble, because they'll be thinking, oh, actually, he's a bit of manipulative. And then he's like, actually, no, I should probably just get rid of him. It's just like, but hopefully, even if those films encourage people to end their relationships, hopefully it doesn't end up with people being burnt alive inside giant bears. And we at Filibuster do not condone that as well. Just putting that out there. Disclaimer.
So obviously this film is getting, you know, kicked off quite well with the Gotham Awards last night. Do you see this film going all the way at the Academy Awards, BAFTAs, all these things? Do you think it's going to do the business?
I think it will. I think there was the Atlanta Film Critic Awards last night, and I think Laura Dern picked up Best Supporting Actress and Adam Driver picked up Best Actor. Now, before Marriage Story came out, I think everyone and their cousin was saying that Joaquin Phoenix was pretty much a lock for Best Actor. I personally think Adam Driver will take it. I think his is the more nuanced and more relatable character. I mean, what Joaquin Phoenix does is very, very good, but I think Adam Driver has a lot of... I mean, what Joaquin Phoenix does as well, I think it's a tough one, but I think Adam Driver would take it on the night. I think he's the film's best shot at the actual Oscar. I think it will definitely get Best Picture nomination, probably Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, definitely. Scarlett Johansson will probably get nominated. Laura Dern will probably get nominated. Randy Newman's score, which I know has been a bit divisive on some people. I think that's one of the maybe the negative things that some people have picked up on. Some people didn't like it. On second watch, I thought it really worked. But I think Netflix has maybe, I don't know, a good problem for them, I guess, in that, you know, they've got The Irishman as well. You know, they could end up, you know, cutting their nose off spite the face in terms of where do they put their time and energy into this. I mean, they can get all the nominations, but once the nominations are in, which one are they going to push towards the finish line? Because I mean, well, apparently they've got a bottomless pit of money, you know, giving, you know, $200 million to Michael Bay to make a new action film with Ryan Reynolds and stuff like that. So I guess they could just throw money at both and then see what happens on the night. But where do you think this film's chances lie?
I think it's going to do incredibly well. I never saw the Joaquin Phoenix nominations coming personally. I think it's not going to happen. I think it's one of the
I think it will happen.
That's going to be our little bet, you know, whoever
a little side hustle on that one.
Exactly. I think that one's going to be, I think it's going to be within a sort of bubble for something like the Joaquin Phoenix one. I don't think it'll happen personally, but I'm probably going to be wrong, as I've often am with these award nominations. You've kind of got the eye and ear for them.
I don't think Joker the film and stuff will make it to the end, but I think Joaquin Phoenix will probably still get a nomination. But
time will tell. It's all going to come quite thick and fast now, but I think it has the potential to go all the way. I'm assuming I didn't enjoy the Randy Newman score at all. I found that quite jarring within the film, and but yeah, I think it has the potential to go all the way. I think Driver has the best chance of probably winning something out of the whole bunch. That would be my lock for something to bet on. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think there's a lot of potential in sort of indie cinema this year for some really exciting films to kind of be nominated this year. I think this could be a real standout.
Yeah, I know, but they keep talking about how the Academy's becoming younger, you know, they're getting younger, more diverse people into the Academy, you know, over the last few years. So after the sort of Oscars So White scandal, so I guess we're going to have to see if that reflects in a sort of wider sort of cross-section of nominees, you know, if we do see the likes of maybe Waves or The Farewell turn up. On so if it's a long list of Best Picture nominees, I could see The Farewell maybe making it into there. Like you see, Awkwafina won an award last night. So, you know, these are the Gotham, these are like the independent and sort of small film critic sections. But, you know, I guess the first one is, I think they'll get announced as sort of like the Golden Globes, which I guess you always take with a pinch of salt anyway. But I guess, yeah, a sort of mid-December, I guess we're going to see how the ballpark is looking at that point.
So we're going to kind of dive a bit into the past now, really, or sort of the most recent past, and we're going to kind of look at the best moments of sort of Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig. Yeah, we've, you know, they're a married couple, so we're going to lump them all in together here. So Dallas, when you were the one that kind of came up with this top three suggestion, where did the idea come from?
Well, you know, we've done a few sort of top threes and stuff before, and, you know, I knew that you're a big No Baumbach fan, so I thought it'd be a good one to maybe try and look into, because, you know, I've seen a few of his, but, you know, I haven't seen his entire back catalogue, but I've a feeling that you probably have, and so therefore I think it's certainly one where I don't think we would have the exact same choices, so I think it'll be a good sort of jumping off point for us to sort of find out what we like, what we don't like, and maybe sort of get some recommendations for future watchers and stuff like that as well, so.
Well, let's put that to the test then. So Dallas, what's your number three pick?
My number three pick is a writing credit for Noah Baumbach, and it is
Madagascar 3.
Nearly. That was one which I was like, oh, really? Okay. But close, it's another animated film, and it's the Wes Anderson directed adaptation of Fantastic Mr. Fox, which for me is one of my favourite sort of book to film adaptations of the last decade. It was 2009, so technically I'm still within that window. And I was at a screening, basically, probably with lots of families and stuff like this, but I was roaring with laughter the whole way through. Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of my favourite Roald Dahl books, but what they managed to do was make it, you know, still accessible to the children, but also they also made it for adults as well. It had that unique sort of Wes Anderson style with, you know, you got the usual cast and whatever, but what Baumbach was able to do with the script was also flesh it out. You know, it's a very sort of linear story in the book where Fantastic Mr. Fox steals chickens and stuff from these three farmers, and then they basically try to flush him out of his house and they have to fight back. Whereas this one, it's sort of like we start off with a young Fantastic Mr. Fox who's merely just Mr. Fox at this moment, not too fantastic, but he will become fantastic, with his wife, and they get captured, and then, you know, it's like, if we get out here, you know, you need to give it up, and so we cut to a few years later, he's got a kid, but he's, you know, what, getting that itch. He wants to go back out for, you know, like one last job sort of thing. And, you know, he gets a crew together, they do a job and stuff, but it's still the same story, but it fleshes out the characters a lot more. And, you know, you get, and what I also love, the one thing I love about this film more than anything is the fact that they introduce swearing into a children's movie in such a delightful way, in that they use cuss words, and that every time somebody swears, they use the word cuss. So that is, you know, this is just a total and utter cluster cuss, I think was my favourite one in that. And they've even got cuss spray on with graffiti on the walls and stuff like that. So, you know, it's the fact that they got away with basically one of the most foul-languaged children's movies ever, but it was still just a PG because it was, what was it? It was, what do they say about these sort of things? Implied bad language or something like that. You can get away with that in that. And I just thought the way he was able to take a Roald Dahl story and still keep it as a Roald Dahl story, but infuse the sort of Wes Anderson around it, I thought was just genius. And it was, yeah, one of my favourite films of that year, actually.
Yeah, fantastic choice. I remembered sort of what going into to see that in the cinema. And I remembered when it was announced that Wes Anderson was doing a stop motion Roald Dahl adaptation. And I remember just being absolutely freaked out with excitement. And that when Noah Baumbach returned with him for their second film in a row, sort of after The Life Aquatic, I was just really happy. I think it was a real treat of a film. And as I say, it's the attention to detail that I've watched this film quite a few times since it's been released in the cinema, on planes, on DVD, Blu-ray, Wes Anderson all-nighters, and it's always one of those ones you get excited for because there's so much to pick from. And I think it's just an incredible adaptation of one of the best kid books of all time.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just what, about 90 minutes long, but it's, you know, it whizzes by, and it's one that I think, like you say, it's got innate rewatchability. It's like if I was just flicking through the channels and it was on, I would just watch it through to the end, no matter what point it started from. And yeah, I mean, it's the cast as well, you know, like George Clooney is just perfectly cast as Fantastic Mr. Fox, and then you've got all the other sort of regulars such as Schwartzman and Bill Murray. Willem Dafoe as Rat, I think, is great. But the even like Michael Gambon is one of Bogus Bunce or Bean. And then Jarvis Cocker's random cameo as Petey. And that was one of my other favourite moments, where Petey's singing a song and then like he gets hit over the head and told that's a bad song, Petey. I mean, I just ended myself at that point. I just thought it was fantastic. And hopefully it won't be the last time we see those two work together, and hopefully another sort of animated stop motion film. I'd love them to go back into that sort of world in the future.
Oh, definitely. So my number three choice is Kicking and Screaming. No, it's not the Will Ferrell movie about American football. It's sort of one of Noah Baumbach's first ever films. So set after college graduation, Grover's girlfriend Jane tells him she's moving to Prague to study writing. Grover declines to accompany her, deciding instead to move in with several friends, all of whom he can't quite work up the inertia to escape their university pool. So nobody wants to make any big decisions that would radically alter his life. Yet none of them want to end up like Chet, the professional student who tends bar and is in his 10th year of university studies. So this was the first Noah Baumbach movie I ever saw, and it was sort of all the way back in sort of the early 2000s, not long after The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou came out in 2004. And I was sort of in that stage where I was discovering the joy of importing DVDs and Blu-ray, well, DVDs at that point, from CD Wow, this like old school website that was just great for like sending over films like months ahead of advance. And I was really diving into sort of Wes Anderson films by that point, and I had no idea who this Noah Baumbach guy was, so I decided to sort of check out his films, and I got my first ever Criterion DVD imported from America, and I was Kicking and Screaming. And it's very kind of a low budget film where it's just people talking, you know, about sort of how intellectual they are, and they're definitely going to get their lives kind of up and running soon. And it's just one of these ones, I think the characters are quite fantastic to watch. They're all very drawn to life, and it starts that sort of mumblecore that Noah Baumbach is quite synonymous with. I think this is a really underrated film. I believe it's on Netflix now. I think it's been on there since they sort of added the Meyerowitz stories on there. So yeah, it's one of these ones if you've kind of lived through that sort of finishing your studies and sort of trying to work out what to do next with your life, this is one of those films that I think everyone's going to relate to. So if you aren't going through a divorce or in a terrible relationship, Kicking and Screaming might be the film that you might be able to relate to. So one I would highly recommend people to find out, and definitely one of his overlooked ones.
This is actually my most recent watch of Noah Baumbach. I just finished watching it this weekend, actually. I found it on Netflix, and I have a confession to make. I actually thought that this was going to be the Will Ferrell American football film, because the only Kicking and Screaming I'd heard of was that one, and I thought, that is an odd choice for Noah Baumbach's directorial feature debut, a Will Ferrell action comedy about American football. So I was very surprised to load up Netflix to find out that it was indeed a sort of mumblecore sort of comedy drama about a bunch of students just leaving university. So I was shocked, but also then pleasantly surprised with what followed. So yes, I can recommend that one as well.
Excellent. So what's your number two?
My number two is going to be While We're Young by A24, and which featured on a previous episode of the A24 Project. And I picked that one not just for that blatant shameless plug, but because I think this was the moment when I realised what Noah Baumbach was about, and this was my way into his style of filmmaking. Because before then, I think that we had sort of like the Francis Haas and stuff like that, and I think I was too old at that point. I think I was slightly too old for Francis Ha, which seems odd given my love of New York, but Francis Ha didn't click with me on first watch. And I think I've said before that, you know, working at the Belmont, there seemed to be an active sort of audience that did not care for Greta Gerwig films, sort of this and sort of Mistress America and stuff like that. So therefore, I wasn't completely sold on it the first time round. And then I was watching While We're Young and I was really enjoying it, but then it was that point when I realised I was identifying more with Ben Stiller's Josh character than the young Adam Driver character, who was the sort of New York hipster sort of person that I thought I was going to identify with, that I realised, I'm officially old. And therefore, I was able to enjoy it. It's like looking at I could see about the appeal of suddenly owning an old typewriter to type things up that, and rather than using a computer, you know, getting rid of your CD collection to get everything on vinyl again and stuff like that. I could see I wanted to do that, but then I was like, I'm old. And, you know, this is what I was talking about with Adam Driver. You know, he plays a guy who is likable and endearing and engaging, but there's something not quite right and slightly suspect about him in the way he operates and stuff like that, but he still draws you in as a character, and I think that's great. And I think Ben Stiller, Greenberg is still one which I think I've still got, looking at my DVD collection, I think I've got a copy still in the sort of wrap, so I need to take that out and watch it at some point to sort of get into the older style, the films with the older person. It's the sort of the lead, but you know, for me, you know, also with it's got the New York thing, so I love New York and I've got that. But I think you know, we've discussed it on, you can go back to the A24 Project where we discussed this film in depth, but I really sort of found myself taking a real shine to this, and this was a film which really sort of made me appreciate Baumbach's work, I think.
Well, if we're going to be sort of echoing each other here, my choice is Greta Gerwig's Lady Bird, another A24 film. So for those not familiar with it, it's about a Californian high school student, Christine Lady Bird McPherson, who plans to escape from her family in small town by going to college in New York, much to the disapproval of her mother. So this was a film that, it's one of those ones, this was getting to the really hard stage of kind of picking apart the things, because I love Noah Baumbach movies so much, and I think Greta Gerwig is such an incredible actress and talent, but Lady Bird has been one of these movies that's kind of stuck with me, and it's been one of the ones that, it's probably the second most out of their kind of combined work that I've watched the most, and I just absolutely love it. I know we recently discussed this on another episode of the A24 Project. I mean, Noah Baumbach actually offered to direct this film written by kind of Greta Gerwig, but she was like, no, I'm going to go off and do this one on my own. And, you know, I think Noah Baumbach would have delivered a fantastic film, but I think Greta Gerwig has delivered such a personal and kind of incredibly relatable film that I think, you know, as well-intentioned as Noah Baumbach is, I don't know how well he would articulate the feelings of teenage hormonal girls. So yeah, this is such a special film, and I think, you know, Greta Gerwig is just a fantastic actress. Lady Bird, and then sort of followed up by Little Women, shows that she's a fantastic writer in her own right and a director as well. So yeah, this is just a hell of a film, and very little new that I can add to what makes it so special. I mean, we just did a 3.5 hour long podcast that kind of covered most of Lady Bird, so I feel like my voice is still hoarse from that.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic one to talk about, because yeah, it's one which just has such great appeal. I think like you say, up until Hereditary, it was like the highest grossing A24 film. It was one that really sort of broke out and showed Greta Gerwig for the incredible talent that she is, you know, just beyond. I think that's something that some people often forget, is, you know, as engaging as a screen presence as she is, and sort of like Sir Francis and stuff like that, she's an incredible writer as well, and now she's proven that she's the real triple threat by adding directing as well to the bow. And that will be a very interesting Oscar night, I think, when potentially Greta and Noah are both nominated for Best Director. It's like, oh, I really want you to win, and they're like, no, I want you to win, and it's like both secretly thinking, I want to win. So yeah, that's going to be a fun conversation to have on the night after Oscars, I think.
So in terms of who you want to win, who came top in your top three Noah Baumbach or Greta Gerwig films?
Well, given what I said earlier, I mean, it, you know, I'm going to sound slightly like a broken record, but for me, it has to be Marriage Story. It is, having seen it twice now, it is my film of the year, and it's just full of so many incredible moments. And, you know, what I really like about it as well is, and I know it's maybe not passé to say these days, unless you're Jeff Goldblum or Scarlett Johansson, but it really sort of reminds me of the work of Woody Allen as well. You know, Annie Hall is about a couple that sort of breaks up eventually because, you know, Annie wants to move to LA and Woody hates LA and he doesn't like to do it. And he's sort of, after one of their trips to LA, they're sort of flying back, and he says, you know, relationship is like a shark, you know, it has to keep moving forward or it's going to die. And I think what we've got our hands on here is a dead shark. And that kind of sort of sums up the relationship at the start of the film of Marriage Story. And then they basically then dive into a pool full of live sharks in terms of the divorce lawyers played so wonderfully by sort of Ray Liotta and Laura Dern. You know, Alan Alda is the one sort of beacon of hope within this whole thing. But then even his sort of, you know, he's part of the problem as well. You know, he's like, you know, in a meeting with Adam Driver, and he's sort of trying to tell him a joke, and he's taking forever, and like Adam Driver's like, it's a frustration, he's like, Bert, am I paying for this joke? And it's just like, yeah, it's like there's no good way of sort of circumnavigating these waters and stuff like that. But I mean, it's like when we watched it at the London Film Festival, it was like, you know, there's people in tears at the end of it. There was, you know, it felt like a boxing match, that incredible sort of fight sort of 2 ways through, where they're starting to really sort of get angry with each other, and they're tearing strips off each other, and Adam Driver says some of the most horrific things you're ever going to hear, and people were like audibly gasping at what they couldn't believe what he just said. It was just like horrific. And then, you know, there was that spontaneous round of applause after his song moment. You know, people thought they were almost in the theater watching it live and stuff like that. It was just an incredible sort of moment, and one of, it's up there with me for my moment of the year, up there with from the Cap grabbing the hammer to the whole portal sequence in Avengers Endgame. Those are my two favorite moments of the year. So but yeah, no, it's got to be Marriage Story for me. And I purposely picked Marriage Story because I have a feeling I know what your number one pick is going to be.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be Frances Ha. So
an inspiring, so predictable.
Yeah, an inspiring dancer moves to New York and becomes caught up in a whirlwind of flighty fare, fair weather friends, diminishing fortunes, and career setbacks. So, yeah, you know, I almost kind of maybe put it in the way that, like, I love Marriage Story. It's fantastic. 5 out of 5 film. It will be in my, like, easily my top 5 of the year at this stage. But the way it kind of, I view it is sort of like the Before trilogy with sort of Baumbach and Gerwig's films, is that, you know, I've watched Before Sunrise and Before Sunset, and I relate to them in good ways and negative ways from what I've seen in that films. But Before Midnight, I think, is a fantastic film. It's a masterpiece, but I don't quite relate to it yet. And I might be on that road in maybe 10 years' time. I'll look at that. Maybe I'll be in a relationship. Maybe I've had the challenges of having kids, all that sort of thing. And I might look at it and go, oh, you know what? I can see that before midnight. I can see myself in Jesse or Celine that were there, but I'm not there yet. Whereas Frances, I've lived that period. When I first saw it, I was going through that period. And I think it's one of the most sort of relatable films that I've ever kind of watched. You know, I'm not a dancer, but there was a lot of things in it that I was able to pull from. And I just think it was for me that moment of like, oh, who is this Greta Gerwig? She's going to be an absolute star. Even though I'd sort of seen her in Greenberg, I didn't have that much of a strong opinion on her. You know, I was more focused on sort of Ben Stiller, but I was really blown away by Frances Ha. I think it's just such a special film, and I think it's probably going to be my film of the decade, but that might be a spoiler for a future episode. But I think it's safe to assume that at this stage.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a great film. It's grown in, I've rewatched it and sort of it's grown in my appreciation of it since I get it now. I didn't get it on first viewing, which is, you know, sometimes what people can do. You know, people will see a film, not like it, but then never get the chance to revisit it. And I'm glad I did, because I really did find a lot in there that I did like. And I mean, who hasn't ever sort of danced along the street now to sort of Modern Love by David Bowie? It's on my sort of running playlist, and I'm sure it's on yours as well. And you know, the chance to sort of do that in New York and stuff like that as well is just one of those things that you have to do if you're there, I think.
I'll ask you this question because I know I do it. Depending on the race on where I'm running, do you do the little spin when Modern Love comes on your running playlist?
I haven't got to this. I was going for a PB on my last one, which I managed to do. So I think depending on the race, I may be able to throw a little spin. It depends how, if you're in I put it on actually towards the end of my run. So actually there should be enough space by that point for me to be able to throw in a little spin. I wouldn't put it on because it's always a bit too crowded and you'd probably get a few dodgy looks as you smack someone in the face.
Yeah, I'd be the same. I wouldn't do it in sort of like a road race or anything like that, but I recently did sort of a cross-country race and like you have plenty of space, and I did the little twist, and when I'm going doing some long distance, depending if there's no one around, I'll do the little spin on the road there. So yeah, I was recently actually on a running podcast. I was invited on by them and we got to talk about sort of Frances Ha and the running side of it all. So yeah, if you check out the Running Away From Your Problems podcast, you can hear me, no doubt, talking about Frances Ha on there as well. So Dallas, we've just praised one of the female directors of our kind of modern era, Greta Gerwig. Who's your 52 Films by Women recommendation this week?
Well, my pick this week is Karen Gillan with The Party's Just Beginning, a film which premiered last year at the Glasgow Film Festival, all the way back in February of 2018. But for unknown reasons, has been yet to arrive on our hallowed shores, but it's finally here, available in some cinemas and on streaming. And it sort of tells the story of Lucy, who lives up in Inverness, who is struggling to cope with the suicide of her best friend Alistair, and is basically descending into a almost Groundhog Day style of cycle of eating chips, getting drunk, having meaningless sex, throwing up, waking up and doing it all again. And she needs something to sort of kick her out of that slump, and it's about her working her way through that, whereas also shining. It's a film which I think has maybe become slightly more timely and relevant these days with the focus that's coming on sort of men's mental health and male suicide and stuff, and being able to talk about those sort of things. So I think it's almost going to benefit from the delay, and it's certainly a film which will sort of strike up conversations. But I think in terms of her directorial style, I think she's very good. She's able to draw good stuff out of the actors because she's an actor herself. But also, I think she's got a great future as a horror director. There's one particular sequence where she's in her house and she's being haunted by the visions of people she's seen commit suicide. And the way it's done feels like a horror film. And I think she's probably picked up a few tips from Mike Flanagan on the way, who we discussed on a previous episode, who did Doctor Sleep and Oculus that she was in. So I think I'd be excited to see what she's got coming next.
Yeah, I caught this one last year, but my recommendation is a film that I haven't caught this year yet, and that's Honey Boy by Alma Harrell. So this was one I missed at London, just due to kind of, you have all these films in the world you can pick from, but sometimes it just comes down to a clash. And this is a film I'm going to see on Friday at the Film House. So starring Shia LaBeouf, Lucas Hedges, and Noah Jupe, a young actor's stormy childhood and early adult years, as he struggles to reconcile with his father and the death, and deal with his mental health. So this is one I'm really excited for. I think Shia LaBeouf is having a pretty fantastic year with this and the Peanut Butter Falcon, and I'm really excited to hear this one. This was one I made the regret of just passing on in London, and seem to have kind of regretted ever since. So yeah, really keen to catch this one, and hopefully it's going to be an excellent late addition to the year.
I have seen this one. I managed to catch a screening of this at London Film Festival, and I was very surprised. This is a fantastic film, and shall I go out on a limb here and say Shia LaBeouf for Best Supporting Actor for playing his dad? Stranger things have happened. I guess we'll find out. But yeah, I'm gonna put out another bet there. So yeah, outside shot. But yeah, he's very, very good. He basically wrote the screenplay going through therapy and sort of for the various public problems that he'd been going through at the time and stuff like that. So he's very cathartic piece of work. So I think Alma is a fantastic filmmaker as well. And I think she's going to be a huge star in the future. And I think you're really going to like this when you see it.
Excellent. Well, I'm sold. So we'll be back again next week to discuss another exciting topic from the world of film. So Dallas, if people wanted to touch base with you, read your Karen Gillan review, where people might find you.
They can get me on Twitter at champcelluloid. And I do written reviews for a website called Flickfeast, and that's at flickfeast.co.uk. And where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at LeeHutchison_. So we'll join you all again next week. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.